It's Friday, which means it's time to get our best bets in as we head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. Our friend, the prop queen, Ariel Epstein, joins us as she does every Friday. And Ariel, thanks as always for your time. We appreciate it. It's your favorite time of year. Baseball is back. And what do you think of the Birds of Baltimore?
Friday to all you Orioles fans. You must be feeling good. I know people don't like to overreact. I do. I had my dad with me yesterday at the Yankees opening day. He's a diehard Orioles fan, always has been from the Baltimore area. He was watching on his phone, got the DirecTV stream because MLB TV was down. And we were absolutely thriving. I'm not even a diehard Orioles fan, big Yankees fan, as you know. The Orioles at 16-1. I said to bet it last week. I loved it. People are so high on the Red Sox. They're unproven. You know who's proven? The Orioles. The Orioles lineup has proven themselves as a legitimate playoff contender. The lineup is young. It's great. They have a chip on their shoulder after being a one seed losing in the playoffs, after losing last year in the playoffs. Even though they don't have an ace like Corbin Burns, Brandon Hyde 2 years ago didn't have an ace. And guess what? They won the division and had 103 wins. I'm very high on this Orioles team.
Ariel, Adley Rutschman really struggled in the second half of last year. But with that being said, is this the time to maybe sprinkle on him for MVP?
I wouldn't blame anybody for putting money on Adley Rutschman to win MVP. I actually have to go look on the sites because in New York we can't bet MVP. So I have to go digging for the odds. But anything longer than 10-1 on a future, I can't fault you. Rutschman not only had a down year at the second half last year, he should bounce back. He had a great rookie campaign. The Orioles completely changed their franchise once he came up to the bigs. Catchers are kind of like offensive linemen in the NFL. We don't really give them enough credit for what they do. Rutschman, being a young catcher who has helped everybody, even pitchers that aren't named Corbin Burns, I mean, this team, with his defense, with his leadership, with his bat, yesterday, every time Rutschman was up to bat, my dad goes, he did it again. He did it again. Rutschman is the heart of this team in so many ways. He is the reason they have turned things around as a franchise outside of Brandon Hyde. Rutschman to win MVP. If the Orioles are in the division race, like I think they will be, especially the World Series race, yeah, MVP, Adley Rutschman, let's do it.
So your own rooting interest, do you overreact to yesterday's Yankee win, the win-aided only home runs in Yankee Stadium bloop shots, Devin Williams' 37-pitch outing? Are you tranquil? Are you good?
I like how you phrased all that. Setting me up for failure. I've not been high on the Yankees since Gerrit Cole was out for the year. Now, maybe they make a move and remember that they're the Yankees and could go get somebody at the trade deadline, and that brings me a little hope, okay? The Yankees fans yesterday got the bad karma that they deserved. I was walking around the stadium. People are high-fiving each other that Clay Holmes was, having a bad start for the Mets and doing Clay Holmes things. I got so much crap from Brewers fans when we got Devin Williams that they said, good luck. I said, okay, I'm, actually glad that the Yankees have a real closer. Yeah. Then yesterday happened. I said, okay, well, that was the Yankees fans' bad karma for laughing about Clay Holmes, because Clay Holmes basically came out of the bullpen yesterday for the Yankees, getting into a jam, luckily giving up one run and getting out of it. I was sweating. I'm just not high on the Yankees, and that's why I put my money on the Orioles, because I'm going to hedge my happiness and be happy for my dad and my family and all my co-Ravens fans when the Orioles actually do better than the Yankees this year.
We're talking with our friend Ariel Epstein. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. Well, Ariel, let's get to a couple of plays for today. And Arizona Diamondbacks hosting the Chicago Cubs tonight. What are you looking at with Merrill Kelly?
I'm looking at his over on his strikeout prop. You can get it at plus money at 4.5 Ks. Last season, Kelly averaged just over 5 strikeouts a game against high K rate teams. At home, he went over 4.5 strikeouts, Kelly, in 2 of 3 home starts when facing these more strikeout-prone lineups. The Cubs averaged just over 5 strikeouts a game last year against righty starters. I know that the Cubs haven't struck out that much in the first 3 games of the year. Kelly's done well in these spots, though. With plus money on that over 4.5, it's a low number. He would have never been here against the Cubs in a month from now. It would be 5.5, so I'll take a shot at it. It was a good value.
Sweet 16 is tonight, but the NBA is coming down the stretch in their regular season. What are some of your top plays in the association tonight, Ariel?
You could look at Darius Garland over his assists at 6.5. He averages 7.5 per game on the second leg of a back-to-back and 8.5 when on the road with Donovan Mitchell playing. Mitchell is the more offensive weapon on the second leg of a back-to-back, averaging about 25 points a game in that spot, and his points props 23.5. You can also look to this Hornets-Raptors game. My favorite thing to do is bet on the Hornets when LaMelo Ball's out. So Mark Williams, the center, he's averaging 16 points a game when Ball is out. Someone's got to make up for that production. The Raptors have no size. Take the over on Williams' points at 14.5.
Ariel Epstein, let the people know where they can find you.
The Prop Queen Pod's debuting today, live streaming 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Check it out on X, on Prop Queen Sports, Ariel Epstein, YouTube at Prop Queen Sports, Twitch at Prop Queen Sports. Be on from 5 to 6 with all the prop analysis for the day.
Awesome. Ariel, thanks as always. Have a great weekend.
You.
We'll chat next week.
Thanks, guys.
It's Best Bets with Beltway Ben Hall on 105.7 The Fan.
You don't have to tell him twice.
Fastest gun in the West, it's Beltway Ben Hall, and what are you looking at?
I got three college basketball plays for you here. We'll start with Houston minus 8.5. I think this is going to be a men amongst boys game. Houston is ready this year. I think this is their season. I think they're going to win it all. Purdue's due for a blowout loss. They've gotten by and had some stuff go their way.
Mm-hmm.
I think Houston knows when there's blood in the water, and they're going to feel that today. I think they cover, win this game, and it's a blowout from the jump. I like Michigan's team total under 73.5 points. Auburn's defense has tuned it up in postseason play, and I think a little bit of that has to do with their offense not clicking as much as usual. Looking at a lot of their elite defensive opponents against Michigan, Michigan State, Maryland, Wisconsin, they've all held Michigan under this. Auburn's 11th in KenPom's defensive rating, so I think Michigan's going to have their hands full tonight. They're a much better defensive team than they are on offense. I think they struggle offensively, and I think Auburn covers, honestly. My last play, Tennessee's team total over 74.5 points. They're over this in 8 of their last 10, and some are very close to the number. They went under this twice against Kentucky during the regular season, but it's not the same team. Kentucky is not very good defensively. I think Tennessee clicks tonight and figure things out and finally ends that losing streak to Kentucky.
Ben Hall, where can the people find you?
At BH Journalist on Twitter. It's been a busy few weeks, but we will have a stream.
Yeah!
Definitely. 1,000% nice. Ken's favorite tomorrow.
Yeah.
Saturday for MLB and college basketball tomorrow.
Ooh, he's got the best streams. Beltway Ben Hall, BH Journalist on Twitter is where you can find him. Coming up next, though, it's just one game. But why are we really buying a bounce-back season from Adley Rutschman after watching said one game? It's Totally Radley. We'll tell you next here on The Fan.
Now the 2-1 pitch to Rutschman is powered deep right field. Roden back at the warning track. That one is way gone over the right field bullpen. And the first run for the Orioles this year is a moonshot blast from Adley Rutschman. 1-0 Baltimore in the first. Another 2-2. Swing and a deep drive, and Rutschman has done it again. 2 home runs for him, 5 for the Orioles, and they've reached double digits. It's 11-2 for Baltimore.
That was Toronto radio on the call at Blue Jays radio, and you heard Adley Rutschman's 2 homers. He drove in 3 runs. He worked counts, did strike out once. Also, I thought, Jason, the most impressive thing I saw, and granted, the homers were impressive, it was punching that single the opposite
field.
Because that's Adley Rutschman when Adley Rutschman's on.
Well, and early in that at-bat, you did see him chase the launch angle and drop the shoulder a bit and try to destroy a ball. And look, he helicopter swing the hell out of that first home run that almost landed in the concourse there.
Too high.
But then when it got into deeper in the count and there's a chance to just, you know, drive a run in and simplify things, yes, I absolutely love that approach. He looked incredibly comfortable all spring long, which we thought would matter, from the left side and the right side of the plate. He's gotten off the fast starts before. He's kind of like Tyler O'Neill. He does a lot of damage opening day. You know, we want to see that continue. I think we will see that continue. He just looked, to me, sort of unencumbered. He looked playful again. He looked like one of the guys. not somebody who would, you know, occasionally do one of those celebrations in the second half of the year, but it was almost seemed like begrudgingly. And he knew that even when he did have a decent at bat, it seemed like there was just going to be, it's going to be another bleep show right around the corner. I think he learned a lot about himself last year. Yeah. I think he learned a lot about leadership and accountability last year. And we're all very bullish on him.
And
we're
humbled.
All buying that he could have his best season ever. And I mean, one of the better seasons by a catcher in Orioles history.
He is certainly Mr. Opening Day.
Yes.
Elias Sports Bureau, they put out this tweet saying, Adley, since 1900, the most times reaching base safely through your first three career opening day games, Adley Rutschman has the most with 12. Since 1900, that's incredible. But yeah, you hit it, Jason. The home runs are great, but it was the 1-2 count, him just singling right over the shortstop there, fighting tough with two strikes there. But him having that strong spring training, and then you hope it can roll into this early part of the season. But it's not just us seeing it, like Adley looks like a different guy. I thought it was very telling, Brandon Hyde, after yesterday's game, saying that he's looked like a different dude, just how he's carried himself since spring training started in Sarasota.
I'll say this as well. I missed it, but I didn't see him go down to one knee one time yesterday.
He was close one time.
It almost happened. And superior balance. All those wall sets probably protected it. But I thought we were going to say
it was close.
And shout out Toronto. That reminded me of those one knee things. Ernie Witt used to do that as old Blue Jays catcher. So be a little shout out there if he did it there. But that was my picture. When I think of Adley Rutschman last year, second half of last year, it was a lot of dropping to one knee and getting under, like popping out. He seemed to be centered in the batter's box yesterday.
Well, he was also just pressing and expanding the zone and swinging at pitches that you would never see Adley Rutschman swing at the prior year and a half.
He treated like his last 300 some plate appearances like they were down by three runs with two outs and two on, and he was perpetually in an 0-2 count, and it was like, let me just see how far I can hit this ball, or let me just walk back to the dugout and take a shower and go on to the next day. I mean, it seemed like he was in feast or famine mode pretty much from the middle of June on.
Now, it was ugly, and Jason, you've pointed this out a number of times. He wasn't just bad. He was one of the worst hitters in baseball bad, and he looks like he's got his swag back. And I know it's just one game, and you don't want to buy into small samples, but he just, like again, he looked like a different dude in the batter's box yesterday.
Well, and if he can hit the way we think he's capable of, and he hits the way we think he's capable of when he catches, then that means he's behind the plate more. That means he's probably more locked in all around. And that means they can float that DH and use that to get a gunner off his feet as well and lean into that a little bit more. Whereas we know Adley ate up a big chunk of the DH pie last year and didn't do a whole hell of a lot with it.
Well, and it was also the fact last year where even when he was in the midst of his struggles, he's still batting second every single time. So you're having someone that high in the lineup just scuffling that horribly. If Adley Rutschman is back, it really completely changes this lineup.
Do we want today's lineup?
Yeah, we got it. We got it. You have it?
I'll do the honors.
Yeah, there you go.
Colton Cowser leading off. We're going to get used to that against
taking a lot of
righties for the foreseeable future. Did get on base a couple times. Adley in the two-hole. Westy back at third, batting third. O'Hearn DHing from the left side. O'Neill back in right field, so no Heston Kerstad. He will wait. Cedric Mullins batting sixth, playing center field. Mounty batting seventh. I don't know that we've seen that very often at first base. Jackson Holliday at second base, where he belongs. And Jorge Mateo batting ninth and playing shortstop.
Hip Mateo, man. That was a scary injury last year.
That was ugly.
His arm got bent back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Good to see him back in the lineup. They did speak to him yesterday before the game. He said he was ready to play all positions. So he can play short. He can play outfield. If you want to put him at second base, I don't know why, unless somebody's hurt. But he's full go, he said. He can play everywhere.
He can. Colton Cowser, 7 at-bats against Kevin Gausman in his career. Does have a home run and 3 RBIs and 1,100 OPS. Again, very small sample size. Mounty does not, as much as Mounty hits in Toronto, probably part of the reason he's batting 7th, in 19 at-bats against Gausman, he has no home runs, a 7.18 OPS. O'Neill doesn't hit him well. Really? Nobody in this lineup has hit Gausman that well, but they've been good against Gausman.
But also yesterday, the only guy that hit Barrios well was Adley.
And then everybody hit Barrios. Then everybody hit everybody in that bullpen, yes. Which, again, one game, don't want to overreact too much. Toronto still might have a bullpen problem.
Yeah, they may. Orioles and the Blue Jays. That game is a 7:07 first pitch.
Apple.
Yeah, Apple Plus. Yeah, Apple at Baltimore Baseball tonight. Tonight, you and Bordy.
Me and Bordy. Kicking off the BBT season, at least.
No BBT yesterday. Yeah, but and then it's full force coming up Monday for opening day.
You're going to need an abacus and a calculator if you're going to be scoring at home.
Yeah.
Who's on BBT from day to day this year?
Yeah. Keep up.
Yeah, if you're scoring
head on a swivel.
By the way, we have a short show on Monday because BBT's 2-3.
Right. We're up against the O's 3-6.
Yeah, so we will be cross.
We'll be talking a lot of Terps and Ravens.
Yeah, maybe the Terps have a new coach. Yeah, we'll see. Hey, coming up next.
Maybe Gary Williams will be the AD.
Yeah, huh? Interim.
Interim AD.
Yeah. Draft is less than a month away. Jason's got some intel on what the Ravens might be thinking draft-wise, and he'll give it to you. By the way, Ben McDonald is going to join us at 4 here on The Fan.
2nd and 10, handoff. Judkins, no running room. Derek Harmon closed up the hole.
Yeah, Derek Harmon shows some quickness along with power.
And it's Oregon football.
Wow.
This ball came out. Harmon comes away with it, ripped it away from Judkins. Take a look right here.
Yeah, he didn't even go for the tackle. He was in the backfield and just went for the football.
Audio courtesy of NBC, Derek Harmon, Oregon defensive tackle, a guy I saw play a lot this year. He is a bit of a monster. Is that somebody, Jason, that the Ravens may have their eye on? He's going to go in the first round, it seems like.
We don't throw 9,000 names at the wall because when you're picking between 25th and 30th every year, well, 25th, 28th, whatever. It was 30. Yeah, they got the championship game one year. So, whatever. There's a lot that can happen, and you're at the mercy of a lot of teams, obviously, ahead of you. But there are certain calculated ones that I think are worth focusing on. And now that we're about a month away, this is a name I've heard tied to them quite a bit. This kid was at Michigan State. He got a little overweight. He got a talking to from some people in his life and from some football people, and he got himself in shape, and he had a chance to play at Colorado for $2 million in NIL or go to GG school for $1.2 million. And he went to GG school for $1.2 million because he thought he'd fit the scheme better, and he thought it would help his draft prospects. And boy, did it. And he's scheme versatile. He's not one of these guys who's just a run stuffer. You talk to people in the scouting community about him. They say he looks like a Raven or he looks like a Steeler. And we've talked a lot already about this group of D tackles and how deep it is and how 28 of them might get drafted and how 20 of them might have real serious NFL careers and how a bunch of them are going to go on the second day of the draft. And that's where the Ravens have a ton of picks. And there's a lot of them that they'd be real comfortable taking there. And there's a couple who they're going to have no shot at, like the two Michigan kids, Grant and Graham. But I'm not sure they pass on Derek Harmon. He's just got the body that they covet. He's got the width. He's got the length. He's got the power. I know they're high on him, and they should be high on him. And a lot of people in Mock Draft Nation, a lot of the wannabe GMs out there who start doing mock drafts, as soon as the draft actually ends for the following year, you don't see him as much. Like, even Daniel Jeremiah, I don't think had him in his top 50 players. But, like, this kid is, I'd be real surprised if he doesn't go in the first round. And before he got hurt last year, if you talk to people who have access to, like, the advanced analytics and the metrics, his inside win rate was number one in the country before he got hurt last year. So, again, he's not just a run stuffer. And maybe he's gone, maybe Seattle takes him. There's a bunch of teams that could take him. But if he's still there, I have a hard time thinking there's somebody who's going to be on their board who they're going to look at and say is potentially more impactful. And if there's a run on them and they don't go that direction, I think this Malachi Starks kid, safety out of Georgia, who's more than just a safety and is kind of a shapeshifter, and you'd say, well, don't you already have one of those guys? I think they want all those guys. I don't think they're worried about position designations and delineations. They can find a way to win with him and a more traditional safety like Ardarius and a Kyle Hamilton all on the field at once. I don't think they would flinch at all, and this is not a great corner safety draft. And so if you want to get one of those premium pieces at the top, at the end of the day, the first day, knowing that there's still going to be a lot of D tackles there, maybe not a Harmon, but a lot of D tackles we like, it could go that way. But I think it probably breaks one of those two ways. And just any time I've talked to somebody about Harmon, like, they just, they're like, yeah, that's the real deal. Like, teams love that kid, and he just looks like a Raven.
We know that since their inception, the best player available, and we sometimes laugh at that because there's years where Patrick Queen really sticks out. They need a linebacker. They say best player available. But with how this roster is set up, and Ronnie Stanley was that big domino in retaining him, because if he did walk, boom, tackle is a glaring, glaring hole. Where do the Ravens have needs? Absolutely. Every single team has needs, but maybe not the glaring needs. So I don't want to say, would anything surprise you, but they could go in so many directions with this.
I talked to someone the other day, because obviously I love Oregon football. And so Derek Harmon is a guy that I was definitely like, that guy looks like a Raven. The impression of the person I talked to is like, yeah, they like him, but I think they like a lot of defensive linemen in this draft. The impression I got from this person is if those safeties aren't there or corners, they would then go defensive lineman, but they think that they're going to go corner or safety in the first round because there's so many D linemen in this draft.
And not to mention that, you said this yesterday, where they spend big money, secondary. Where they invest high draft capital, secondary.
Yeah, I would say that I agree with what you're saying. I think there's certain players who are an exception and who would stick out. And
this
they'd
guy's
say,
a stud.
Yeah, we just think there's too much there, and we could do a whole lot with him now, and we can dream on him 2 years from now as he continues to work on his body. And I think he would fall into the category of, yeah, he's better than what he's better, and he's more than better. He's potentially significantly better than what we're going to get in, you know, around the 120s.
Yeah.
So we're going to do this now. And I don't think there's a whole lot of those guys, but I'm becoming increasingly convinced that he's won.
Not for nothing, the last time I think they took a defensive tackle in the first round, it worked out pretty damn well. That was Haloti Ngata. Yeah.
Well, and they're going to, too. Like,
it's crazy. It's been that long. Yeah.
To Bone's point about how it sets up, it's a great draft to want and need defense because it's loaded. The best players are defensive, but because it's not a great offensive draft, the ones who are there are going to get pushed up. Like, it's not a great offensive line draft, but five or six are still going in the first round because, if you're not in love with the fourth, you really don't like the 16th in this draft. And, like, wide receivers, the same thing's going to happen. Like, more of them will go in the top 50 than they probably should because there's not that many of them. So, you know, if you don't have to dabble in those markets up high, inherently players are falling to you on the defensive side of the board. Better players you already have rated higher and who fill more immediate needs.
Yeah, and that's where it goes to how Eric DaCosta has navigated the offseason thus far, bringing back Ronnie Stanley, bringing in DeAndre Hopkins to add some depth at wide receiver. As things currently stand, the tight end room's fine. Like, offense is pretty
ready. They're so loaded on offense, we want them to trade Andrews.
Exactly.
If you're not going to pay him. But on the defensive side, we're still saying, what would happen if Van Noy got hurt?
Yep.
Who is the guy to play next to, like, Roquan? Is that guy here? You know, I don't know.
Speaking of Van Noy, is the people you're talking to, and I know this wasn't the assignment, but any edge guys that these people like? That, because we've seen some names of guys, the Boston College kid that could be there when they pick, like anybody that you think they like?
Yeah. I think they like Shamar Stewart at Texas A&M. And if you look at the sack numbers, they're not great, but the analytics are off the charts. And like, do I think they look at Shamar Stewart and say, okay, we learned from some of our mistakes with Owe and we could do better with this guy? I absolutely do. Now, I mean, we're talking about a dude with 4.5 sacks. Like, I think he had 2 last year. I can tell you Bobby D absolutely loves him.
Mm.
And well, if Bobby D absolutely loves him, yeah, I can tell you that John Harbaugh heard all about Shamar Stewart from Bobby D. I think Shamar Stewart is absolutely a name. Like Bobby D said, if you squint hard enough, you could see Myles Garrett.
Whoa,
and Bobby D was in Cleveland when they drafted Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
And then the one other name that I think is worth keeping an eye on is a D tackle, Walter Nolan out of Mississippi. And he's a kid who I think, while he's listed as a D tackle, I think he could play outside in your nickel packages. In fact, I asked Bobby about that, and he said he thinks he could play outside linebacker in a 5-2 look, maybe this kid in Roquan.
Wow.
So, I don't know. Like, most people are just sort of writing him up as just a, you know, sort of a pure D tackle. But I know Bobby thinks there's a lot more versatility in there. You know, he can play on the edge. He could play inside on a nickel. He could be a chess piece in a 5-2 look. So I think that's another kid where if he's there and maybe a safety's there, what is the drop off? What do they do? But I think it's probably defense, and I think it's probably one of these guys I'm talking about.
Draft will be here before you know, and we'll be keeping track of what's going on for the Ravens as they get ready to pick 27th in the draft. We want to hear from the people next. By the way, Ben McDonald joining us at 4 o'clock. We'll talk O's with him. But Terps basketball season is over. Terp fans, how are you feeling about how this thing ended? How do you feel about Kevin Willard? 410-583-1057. We can talk some O's as well as they mashed on opening day. 410-583-1057. We hear from the people next here on The Fan. Let's get right into it here from the people. 410-583-1057. A lot of people want to talk about the Terps, who are now done as they got beat by Florida last night. Season over, and their coach might be gone. It looks likely gone.
Get him out of here.
Let's go to Samaj. Samaj, you're on The Fan.
Hey, what's happening, fellas? What's good? What's good? What's good?
Happy weekend.
Yeah, well, a little salty, but yes. A happy weekend.
Yes.
We can transition on the O's energy.
Yes.
Because boy, did they open up a can yesterday. That was like fantastic, especially with the counter what came later. And that's really what I want to call. You know, Kenny. You know, you've been one of my Terps guys on air forever, as I've called throughout the years. Pitbull, not as long, but from your passion and from what you say, I know you've been down with him pretty much probably just as long as we have. So this whole kind of thing has just been like, you know, jive surreal with a heavy dose of salt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
First time Sweet 16 in forever. First time we had a legit coach. I mean, like a guy that could really coach X's and O's, timeouts. I mean, just a great coach. And then for it all to just kind of like fizz and fade out this way, with the deception, apparently, it's just like, man, and then, you know, the whole Damon Evans thing and his dipping, I'm not mad at him at all. I mean, Dallas come calling with a bag, you know, very few of us would turn that down, you know, I'm not naive. I know how big business works. I know how contracts works when you're in contract versus trying to get another one. You're almost kind of forced to do the secrecy and you know, the veiling of the truth and that type of deal, because you almost can't make a move without doing it that way. So
yeah,
when you say less, not do what this guy did.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't know that Damon was gone until he was gone. Well, and then Willard pushed him out the door.
I think Samaj is gone.
Yeah, he is gone.
I think that's when you say less, and that's when you put the spotlight even more on your players and your team. And that's when you let your agent actually do the job. This guy couldn't help but try to be his own agent in public to the detriment of the program.
Well, it was going in on the Thursday prior to the first game, then going on with Kevin Sheehan and a little less. And then the other day where he was asked about it and he would just deflect to Florida. Like, you can't both sides. Well, you can't put the genie back in the bottle after you just unloaded on the program.
Last night he was at least being honest. Let's go
and Samaj, I go back to Albert King.
Yeah.
Albert King is my first favorite Terp. So
I liked Albert King.
Yeah. I was a big Adrian Branch guy,
too. Yeah, huge Adrian Branch guy.
I would go watch him play at the Towson Center for the ball and the CBA for the Baltimore Lightning.
Me and a bunch of Jewish fellas at Camp Skylamar, we tried to imitate Len Bias, but it didn't work.
I mean,
as
I love
well.
Len Bias, so. But I mean, everybody loved Len.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to Ryan and Rosedale. Ryan, you're on the Fan.
Albert King.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, man?
Got Albert King's number?
Hey, so
we should have him on the show.
A couple of things. First off, I don't know how Kevin Willard got to be such a hot commodity, right? Like he said, 3 seasons in Maryland, the first two, not so great.
First one was good. He took Turgeon's guys to the second round of the tournament.
He did a good job.
Overachieved.
Yeah, but you know what? We've lowered the standard here for Terps basketball over the years. But the main point is, like, I'm not really hating the guy like you guys are, though, because even if he's gone, I think having aired out the dirty laundry of the program might actually help. You know, whether he stays or goes, the fact that this team's not spending the NIL money or not getting what they need to be one of the better teams in the country. So it's my hope, you know, and I'd rather him stay at this point only because it's going to set the program back 3 to 5 years by
him
leaving.
He's gone.
So at that point, he's gone. Maybe at least, hey, throwing out there for the record, hey, this is what's going on at Maryland. Maybe it makes the leaders of the school think, hey, we got to – because football's
Can I offer another way to do it?
Yeah, appreciate
it. Could I offer another way to do it? He tells his buddies – he whispers to his buddies Fanta and Rothstein, here's what's going on here. He doesn't have to say it himself. He doesn't have to hijack press conferences that are supposed to be about the team playing in the postseason to go scorched earth himself. There's a way, if you really do care about the program – he doesn't care about the program – that you could have had that out there, but also taken some semblance of a high road to where it doesn't become the predominant story in with your team.
And let's go back a few days when he first started broaching the fact that I need this and this. We were all champions of that because we thought he was using it to leverage to get that stuff to help the program.
Yes.
But really, he was airing his dirty laundry on his way out the door.
He wanted to shame and smear people on the way out.
Yeah, let's grab one more. Ian's in Timonium. Ian, you're on the Fan.
Hey guys, I love your show as
Thank
always.
You.
I think I have the perfect guy for once Humpty Dumpty leaves Maryland. Ex-Maryland, great EuroLeague coach, played under Gary Williams, Sarunas Yasikevich. He's doing an amazing job in the EuroLeague. I know the Toronto Raptors wanted to hire him a few years ago and a few other NBA teams, but he's got Maryland ties. Hopefully Gary Williams, if he becomes the interim AD, can get him on the phone if we don't get Buzz Williams. But I think he's a Maryland man. We talk about Maryland.
Yes.
Man. And imagine getting some of those European players over here with those connections. I think he's an ex-ball player. You got to ask Jimmy Patsos more about him. I think Jimmy coached him and see what he would think, but I would love that hire.
It's interesting. I hadn't thought about Sharon Jessica.
I'm definitely open to being creative.
Yeah.
This is a global game now. It needs to be thought of as a global game. And could you pair him with somebody who's here who knows the landscape of AAU and Baltimore Catholic League and DC Catholic League.
Yeah.
You could put together. Yeah, you'd have to put together an interesting staff. You should text that one to Patsos.
I'll text Sunshine. He's on his way to Atlanta, or he might be in Atlanta already. Because
plane might have Wi-Fi, whereas the Terps plane did not. Could you imagine if they put Mick Cronin on a 6-hour flight without Wi-Fi
and no food?
And no, well, there might be food on this plane.
But he needed
food.
Remember, he complained about the lack of food. Hey, we need to step out.
Try to get a rise out of Beltway.
Yeah. Coming up next, we'll talk O's. No Masson tonight as the game's on Apple Plus. But Ben McDonald from Masson joins us next here on the Fan.